Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am Reggie Darden, and today I have another wonderful guest that I've been looking forward to chatting with and hearing her story for quite a while. So, Quarte Denea.
Yes. Yep. All right.
We're gonna get into her journey and excited to learn about her story. For those that may not have seen some of her videos and such on various social media platforms, she is quite the Kenpo stylist, and I suspect also done some other things from some of the videos I've seen, but we'll get into that more as we go along. But I'm just really excited to chat with you. I first became aware of you. You kind of popped up in one of my YouTube feeds, YouTube scrolls, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, like who's this? It got some pretty good moves. I believe you were still a blue belt, I think, was one of the first videos that I saw. And saw the video, and your movements were pretty good, and I was like, oh, we're like right on, you know, blue belt representing here. So I was excited to see that. I think I was probably just got my purple, or I might have still been an orange when I first saw it. So seeing a colored belt move well and just getting out there and representing was nice to see. So I was cheering for you from the get-go. Yeah. And then once I started doing the show here, I was like, okay, I definitely have to get her on to find out all the details. So we're gonna go ahead and turn it over to you. How did Kenpo find you? Where did you get started? And we'll just kind of go from there.
Okay. I guess I can say that, like, my interest in martial arts started from a very young age. I used to, like, around the age of 6, 7, 8-ish, I used to spend a lot of my summers with my grandmother. And she lived in Kankakee, Illinois. So I was born and raised in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So my mom and I would drive down to Kankakee, and I'd stay with her for the summers. And I always have really fond memories of my time there. But unfortunately, I had a lot of bullies. You know, I was kind of like the city girl in the country. And so a lot of the kids bullied me a lot for that. So it was a little tough. It was a little tough socially for me. I was already a very, very shy, reserved kid. I was just so shy. I had a lot of trouble making friends at that time. And the bullies, they kind of affected me a lot. And I remember my grandfather, Roosevelt, I used to talk to him about it, because my grandma was real tough. She was always like, punch him back, punch him. And I'm like, you know, I was still so shy like that. I couldn't even imagine something like that. But my grandfather, who was into martial arts too, he kind of sat me down. Like, I still remember this one particular memory, and him holding his hands up and asking me to do some, like, essentially some heel palms, some tiger heel palms to his hands. And he that was the only thing he really taught me. I think that's probably the only thing that he knew, but he gave me something. And I remember feeling in that moment like, okay, you know, maybe next time I can do something other than submit to the bullies, or, you know, feel small and feel weak. I have something. I've done, like, these heel palms with my grandfather that gave me just a little bit of confidence. But even just that little bit of confidence was something that stuck with me up until today, you know, until my adult life. But moving forward a little bit, I grew up mainly a gymnast. I started the sport of gymnastics pretty late. I was 10 years old. You know, honestly, gymnastics and martial arts were always the sports that I wanted to do, but, you know, I was definitely not raised with a silver spoon in my mouth, so it wasn't something that was financially feasible for my family whatsoever. So it was mostly just kind of having dreams of it until middle school, where they had kind of this free and reduced lunch program that my family was a part of. And so with that, I was able to do gymnastics, join the school's gymnastics team, and essentially not have to pay because of being a part of that program. And so, you know, once I had my chance, you know, in my eyes, I'm like, wow, I've been waiting for this moment like my whole life. I finally get to do it. And so I knew then that I really wanted to do my best. You know, my mother drilled into me for as far back as I can remember that I can do anything I put my mind to, as long as I put my mind to it and I focus and I'm diligent and determined and responsible for my ambition, I can do essentially anything in the world. And I really told myself that over and over again and let that kind of settle into my heart and my spirit. And gymnastics gave me a place where I can really kind of put that into practice. And so especially with a sport like gymnastics, a lot of people start their children in that sport very, very young. And I would know now because I'm a gymnastics coach. I have been teaching for, 13 years. So I know that everybody kind of starts their kid out at the younger ages, like maybe toddlers, 2, 3, 4, maybe. But so when I was going into gymnastics at 10, you know, I had a lot of kind of subtle comments made from mentors and, you know, counselors and just, you know, the people in my life at that time saying that, oh, I don't know, maybe pick something else, that, you know, I don't know how much success you'll actually get in this sport. And, you know, that was a little disheartening at first, but it really gave me some fire to really kind of prove them wrong, because I knew I loved the sport. I knew I was interested in it. And so I decided to take it upon myself to do it anyways, and to kind of really be courageous in my pursuit of that. And so fast forward, I did that. I, you know, worked my way up. And by my junior and senior year, I was captain of my varsity high school team and found a lot of fulfillment in taking on more of a leadership role, not just competing, but also being able to help and motivate and inspire my teammates, and then to give them notes and give them clarifications that made them better. It really fueled me, and it was a wonderful feeling, which really led me into teaching, which I did pretty much immediately after kind of, I guess, concluding my gymnastics career. You know, I knew I wasn't going to the Olympics. I knew I wasn't going to be competing nationally or anything like that. And it'd still be kind of a tough pull to go to university. But I did know that I loved the sport. I knew that it taught me a lot about myself, and it gave me an incredible work ethic that that helped me build my acting career and get into college and, you know, graduate with honors. And it just really taught me how to be disciplined in my mind and courageous in my action, because, you know, gymnastics isn't something you can do halfway. So I knew as a career, though, I wanted to act. And so after graduating high school, I went to I came to Los Angeles, went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, stayed there, got my degree, got an additional acting certification, and then kind of moved into the hustle of it. So, which is, as they say, as difficult as everyone said it was, but also I had a lot of successful moments that I'm truly grateful for. And with that, though, with my career, there's also the other side. There's a lot of rejection, a lot of hard work put into it. And it was wearing on me a little bit. It was wearing on me. And I had just put so much of my time and focus into auditions and acting that I knew I needed something to give me a little more balance. This is like probably my favorite part of my story in terms of coming to martial arts, because it felt like just any other night. I was up really late. I couldn't sleep, which is not normally a problem for me. I'm like out like a light when it's time to go, like I'm gone. I hibernate. So whenever I find myself kind of in a bout of insomnia, for lack of better words, I feel that, you know, it's God kind of beckoning me to get into the Word. You know, I love the Lord. I love Jesus Christ. I've given my life to Him. And so I felt Him kind of calling to my spirit one night. And, you know, whenever I kind of have these moments and I feel that call, I try to be very obedient to it. And I went into my Word, and long story short, it led me to kind of hearing His voice and feeling led to look into martial arts, which was very exciting because, you know, it's always something that I wanted to do, as I told you, from my childhood. But I was so focused on my career, you know, I was able to do gymnastics. So I guess I reached a level of like, well, you know, I at least got one of them. I at least got one of the two, you know. But feeling this like call, I guess is just the best way to describe it, towards martial arts really got me kind of energized. And so it was definitely a night I did not sleep. It was an all-nighter. I just remember being on my laptop and searching like all the different styles of karate or styles of martial arts. And so I was looking at karate and judo and jiu-jitsu and taekwondo and muay thai. And I knew I took a Krav Maga class for a little while back in the day too. So just like I wanted to be really well versed in the different styles of martial arts so that I could find something that worked for me, because I wanted to have practical self-defense skills. Like I wanted to actually train my body in something that would keep me safe and keep the people I love safe, while also finding something that interested me in terms of the movement. Being a gymnastics coach, I had trained my eye to such a specific degree that I wanted something that can kind of engage my mind in that way, and that challenged me. I do know that I can pick up things pretty well in terms of athletics and movement. I know that I'm kind of a fast learner in that way, but I wanted something that like really intrigued me. So I was very specific in what I was looking for in terms of style. And of course, school, teachers, community in that way. So I remember going first to a Taekwondo school. I enjoyed it. I realized very early on that I was probably going to enjoy all of the martial arts styles. Because I enjoy martial arts and there's like so much to learn from everything. Taekwondo was great because, you know, I had already had the flexibility and the balance from gymnastics. So that felt like a really easy, that would have been a nice choice based off of my background. But I wasn't a big fan of the lack of upper body, and it didn't feel as balanced as mm-hmm. I was looking for. Although I still think it's incredible and there's some incredible Taekwondo practitioners, I didn't think that that's where I needed to be, and I didn't feel any confirmation in my spirit for that. So I moved on, tried out some jiu-jitsu, which I felt was very, very practical. But I can be honest with you right now, Reggie. I'm a Black girl, okay? Mm-hmm. And as much as I love the fight and the tumble, I'm not trying to have anybody dealing with my hair. I'm not trying to roll around on the mat. I get it, and I still did go and kind of explore jiu-jitsu. And I think jiu-jitsu is so like invaluable, the skills within that kind of grappling ground fighting. I'm still definitely going to train in jiu-jitsu in the future for sure, but I don't know if I'm going to do it as formally and as intensely as I did with Kenpo. So,
I like that you say that because that kind of mirrors my thoughts about jiu-jitsu. I'm going to have to say previously, because you can't see it right now, but I am actually wearing my jiu-jitsu pants. I just started jiu-jitsu a few weeks ago, Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Oh,
and nice. I was going to go for the noon class, but a pesky thing like work got in the way. So I'm going to have to go to the evening class. But I was never really super interested in doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Dating myself, I was quite much like the rest of the world, was quite shocked and surprised by the first UFC event and seeing Royce Gracie do his thing and just mm-hmm. Brazilian jiu-jitsu just really got thrust upon the martial arts world and took what everybody had in their minds about style versus style. Brazilian jiu-jitsu just really shook everybody's belief systems all to everywhere. And so mm-hmm. I did some rolling around back in the day with my Kenpo buddies, and didn't really understand it. And since doing this show, I've talked to quite a few Kenpo folk that are getting into the jiu-jitsu now, and have really, really great things to say about it. And I've always felt that, yes, you should have some sort of a ground game, but I was never particularly interested in formally training in jiu-jitsu. But now, from just kind of all the recommendations and now giving it more of a fair shot in training and doing the training classes, I've warmed up a lot more to the painful snuggling, the art of folding clothes while people are still in it. That's mm-hmm. it's a fun time, but I can definitely relate to. Yeah, it wasn't really my thing. I like kicking and punching, and
yeah.
So it's taken some time to get warmed up to it, but I do like having all the different things in my toolbox now and looking forward to getting more. Jiu-jitsu is a lot more technical than I realized. Which is very nice in complement with Kenpo, in that Kenpo is very technical, and knowing those principles, knowing all these little bits really makes for such a better fighter, better student, a better teacher, better Absolutely. All-around person. So I'm definitely warming up to it, and excited to see what's next. But that's just little jiu-jitsu tangent.
No, yeah, absolutely. Like it's you can't deny it. I guess I see it as just another zone. We mm-hmm. train in Kenpo for like different zones, going high, going mid, going low, and then there's the ground. So that, mm-hmm. that's like the last zone that like I definitely would like to continue my martial arts journey in. But so yeah, I was saying I was going through some of these different styles. I think the style that I kind of resonated most with out of the ones that I did try was Krav Maga. But then I ended up at Shaolin American at SASTA by Donnie Jeffco, who was your last guest I saw.
Yeah, it was an interesting time. I swear I didn't plan it this way, but as we're recording today, my episode with him released today. So crazy timing how that worked out. But it was a joy to speak with him and check it out.
Yeah, folks, I came across Shaolin American, and I love the community of people. That was kind of one of my first impressions. Some of the other schools I had tried, not that, you know, they weren't nice or anything like that. It's just, you know, there's just like different energies. You know, I could feel the different energies. Even with the jujitsu class, it was kind of the women's jujitsu class, which I appreciated very much. But at the same time, it was, I could just feel like there's just like, it's hard to describe, but there's this weird trepidation in the room that just made me feel like uneasy. And
yeah, I can relate to that as well. As at this particular point, I'm kind of in a transitional period as far as being. I was kind of like you were. I was kind of school shopping. My Kempo school closed down recently, unfortunately. So I was like, well, maybe this is the time to start looking at other styles while I kind of figure out how my Kempo journey is going to continue. And I tried some jiu-jitsu schools, tried a Shotokan school, a few FMA schools, a Hapkido school, kind of been all over the place. And yeah, there's a definitely a different energy. While I thought the school was fine and the instructors were fine and, you know, everything was nice, just that vibe, that there's that thing that you can't really put your finger on it, but it's like, this is maybe not the right place for me, or maybe right at this particular time, this is not the place for me. So, yeah, I can relate.
Yeah, so I guess maybe, you know, it was the schools, but once I went into, my Kempo school, I kind of started to feel my spirit feel like, okay, this feels like a place for me. So just by the people, I really wanted the people around me and my dojo mates to feel comfortable with them. You know, doing self-defense is already, especially as a woman, is already kind of a daunting task coming into something brand new. You know, I have my life experiences where I had to deal with violence and abuse and bullying and all of that. So, you know, I had my past traumas that made it kind of already like I was taking up a lot of courage just by like following through with this, you know, this little calling I felt in the middle of the night on a random like Thursday or something. Mm-hmm. So I show up and, you know, the instructors were wonderful. And the people were nice and welcoming, and it really had a great sense of community. But then there was the Kempo. And I just remember like seeing it for the first time, like in person, I'm just like, what is this? Like, I'm trying to look at the hands, I'm trying to look at the knees, the feet, and now they're on the floor. I'm like, what just happened? And I became so intrigued by what I was looking at. I wanted to figure it out. I wanted to know it. I wanted to have the knowledge of that. I think going back to my childhood and being kind of shy and being kind of, I spent a lot of time alone. Even, you know, my beautiful, wonderful mother, you know, she was a single mother, and she was working 2-3 jobs. And it got to a point where, you know, I was going to daycare, but there was bullying there even. Mm-hmm. There was just a lot of difficult situations happening with the childcare providers. And so it got to the point where, you know, I remember her sitting me down and telling me, like, you know, I know you're a mature kid for your age. I'm going to teach you how to kind of essentially like live, like take care of yourself on your own. So, you know, she'd leave me at the house alone at a very early age, and like 7, and like, don't answer the door. If there's a fire, here's what you do. Kind of, you know, hit me with the basics. And you know, I know how to follow that. I don't want any of that to happen. So I'm like, okay, I'm listening, taking notes. Like, okay, mama, got you. And so with that, though, I spent a lot of time alone. So socially, I didn't have a lot of friends. You know, all I had was kind of my imagination, which I think led to, you know, my pursuit of a career in acting. And my mother is the biggest martial arts fan I think I've ever met.
Oh, wow.
She's kind of like, never did it, but is like the one that will have every VHS. And, you know, I don't know, like maybe this is just my household, so I'm going to put that out there in case other people go through this too. But she's got this thing going where she doesn't like a quiet house. She has to have like a movie on or like a show on. There just has to be something playing at all times. And so when that was like when she was gone, I turned all the TVs off. But then when she was there, it was constant martial arts films. So it's like, it feels like I was just raised in martial arts. They were just always around me. They were always on, like Jackie Chan, Bruce Lee. Like it was just, you know, Steven Seagal. It was constant. So I think those two things too, kind of being kind of isolated for a lot of my childhood and my mother's kind of love for martial arts films and kind of, she would like to watch them and do the kind of react, like the, oh, wow, he got hit, or oh, he got smacked. Look at rewinding the VHS back to that one moment, like crying in tears kind of thing. It brought her a lot of joy. And I'm just like, mom, that's kind of violent. Don't you think that's kind of like, you know, but what about mercy? She's like, oh, girl, you know what I mean? Girl, you know, mercy. Look at him, popped him in the face. I'm like, okay. So, you know, I guess that's the real root of, I think, my love for martial arts. I didn't know it until later on in life, how much it really affected me. But so, yes, going back to what I was saying, going into Kenpo, I really wanted to figure out what this was. I, you know, made it happen so that I could sign up and started my journey there. And I remember just loving how like technical it was, how there was so much to think about. It was like a way of thinking instead of just do this here and do that there, and kind of leaving a lot of space where you know, the Kenpoist, the practitioner, has to kind of decide what they're going to do next, how much force they're going to use, what target they're going to use, what weapon they're going to use, you know, what, you know, it was so interesting to me. And it's like, I feel like I started my martial arts journey kind of thinking about my career and thinking about practical self-defense. But then, like, I think Kenpo just gave me way more than I even ever anticipated. While training, I guess, like what ended up happening was I just like fell head over heels in love with it. I realized that Kenpo and martial arts was something that I needed, and becoming a martial artist kind of deepened my understanding and connection to myself and who I really am. And I feel like, you know, that God really used this as almost like a vehicle to more inner healing for me. It was like a catalyst even to awake my inner fighter, or, you know, to find this balance within my spirit, but through my body. I really just felt this deep spiritual connection to it. And I guess that's what really, like, this like internal transformation that I felt happening started to give me, like, I guess I see a lot of things in my head visually. I think I just from my upbringing, as I told you, I spent a lot of time in my head, whether that's like very critically thinking, logically thinking, or creatively thinking. And I just had this vision of taking Kenpo, and I wanted to expand upon it. I wanted to share it with the world. I feel like it's like, how did this thing exist? And I didn't know until now. Like, you know, what, and, you know, and then I go online because I'm heavy on the research. I will go into something and figure it out if I did, like, put my mind on it, right? So I started to just look up Kenpo online, and I found some stuff, but I'm like, I don't feel like I'm finding, like, the example of the Kenpo I figured I would find, if that makes sense. Like, not to, you know, I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus here or anything like that, but it was hard to find any women doing Kenpo. It was hard to find you know, Black people doing Kenpo. I mean, there were, but they were harder to find. And if you did, it's like, it's a picture of them and I can't see the movement. And I'm very big on the movement. I want to see it. I want to be able to look at it and like have my eyes on it. And I knew that there was kind of a hole there. And, you know, I took it upon myself. I'm like, I can do this. This is a place where I can spread Kenpo, and I know my love for Kenpo will be captured. I know how cameras like can kind of take up, can show the soul, show the essence of the individual, and I know it's changing me. So I wanted to start taking that to social media. I knew that I needed to kind of be better about social media as an actor. But I, like most, I'm like, this doesn't, like, I don't want to do this online thing. Like, I could be doing better things with my time. I'm still kind of not a social media person, but I knew that it was a platform and it was something that I could use to kind of get to my goal here. So then I decided to kind of commit to that. And I wanted so badly to be a positive role model and representative of Black girls and Black women in martial arts and show a certain level of excellency on behalf of them. Because I just know growing up with all those martial arts films and all the stuff my mom put on, you know what I mean? It was like, I can tell you other than Catwoman, right? You know, or like Storm, yeah. But like, I couldn't find them. I couldn't see me in those spaces, which is probably why I overlooked a lot of it growing up. But, you know, now I'm older, know better. I know that they are out there, but it's just, you don't see them. And so this was a place where I could also kind of fulfill that, you know, for the young girls, for young girls today, you know, and also everybody, but, you know, especially them, because of course my personal connection to that. So I started doing that. I remember feeling absolutely awkward at the beginning. Still kind of awkward, to be honest.
I'm right there with you.
it's a scary place. It's weird. You don't really know what's going to work, what's not going to work. And, you know, I'm already kind of a perfectionist. I'm working on that one. But, you know, being so critical of myself and, you know, that's also hard because it's like, I know that I'm learning. I can't expect perfection, but I want to put out my best. So, you know, not necessarily being a Black belt, I'm like, how do I share without like completely regretting all of this by the time I'm Black belt and I actually know what I'm doing, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think it's a way of kind of letting go, being okay with vulnerability, which a lot of people I think struggle with too. It's like, you know, perfection isn't, you know, that's never a good setup, striving for that. So I figured it, you know, at least I felt in my heart and my spirit that people seeing the actual journey, the true journey of not knowing and then knowing and, you know, putting in hard work and growing, that they would relate to that. And I kind of think like my documentation of that would be inspiring, you know, and sometimes inspiration is strongest, I think, not in just like the accolades or the you know, it's more about the journey. And so I found that kind of willpower to do it anyways. You know, I think too, being at my school and, you know, I'm moving up in the ranks. Like I said, I'm not a Black belt, but like I'm going online. And so I just felt a little awkward. I don't know how to say it, just awkward, I guess. Yeah, like, you know, I'm posting Kenpo videos and then I go into school and I have to be on the mats and sit there and be like, you know, just like, you know, and, you know, I'm a very humble person. I just enjoy what I do and I like to do it as excellently as I can. But there's always that fear that people will misinterpret or prejudge me or kind of, I guess, assume or I guess, yeah, I guess assume that, you know, I think I'm better than people, or I think, you know, I'm comparing myself in terms of levels to other people, you know what I mean?
And oh, yeah.
That was a little bit a tough part in my journey. When it's that comes into question, I guess. But, you know, I you know, it did kind of dissuade me a little bit from kind of doing that, from sharing my Kenpo with the world. And even though I had a lot of positive feedback from it, and, you know, I could tell that it was like touching people, which is what I wanted, it was still just kind of like a little scary and daunting. So, but I tried to focus more on, not so much on how I felt, but more on the good that it will bring, because that's the purpose behind it. It's not really just so everybody can be like, hey, look at me, which, you know, like this is, it's helpful in terms of my career, but it wasn't the root of why I was doing this and what drives me to keep doing this when it gets annoying and I have to deal with trolls and, and, you know, the patriarchy and racists and like just crazy stuff. It's, you know, it's the world. It's a reflection of kind of the world we're in, and it's not all, you know, sunshine and rainbows, but, you know, they take sacrifice for anything that's worth doing and anything with purpose, I think. And so I continued on, and I know that it has given me an edge, I think, having to put myself on tape so often and to edit all those tapes. And I guess it gave me more time than maybe the average Kenpo practitioner. It gave me more time to really look at my movement, not just like in the mirror on the mats, but like looking at it from that third point of view that Master Ed Parker always talks about. And I really feel like I got a broader understanding of what he meant by that third POV. And I think it gave me an ability to critique my the concepts of Kenpo within my Kenpo a little easier and kind of disconnect myself from it. Cause, you know, when you're doing Kenpo and you're standing in front of your partner and you're in the motion of Kenpo, there's, you know, it happens in the blink of an eye, really. Oh, you know, Kenpo's fast. It moves fast. And I love moving fast. You know, I love kind of like the leopard speed. Right. But, there's only so much you can really focus on in there. And so I really appreciate that this content creation subcategory here in my training helped me connect to my movement and understand my movement and my tendencies a lot better. Especially once I started to get to, you know, green and brown, when things get like, at least in my mind, that's when things were like, whoa, okay.
Oh, yeah. Kenpo. Like, oh, yeah. I'm right there.
Like, that's felt like my, I always say my green butt was my like Kenpo renaissance, because it's when things started to click a little bit more. So that brought me, kind of through my main Kenpo journey. The thing I hadn't mentioned was when I started Kenpo, even though I loved the school, loved the style, I was still very interested in weapon work. And it's still an empty hand style. And even with some of the other style, martial arts styles that kind of like, you know, kenjutsu, and because I was very, very interested in the sword and all of the really like kung fu weapons, like any of them, like I'm going to be excited about, really. I just was super interested in them, but I had to prioritize, you know, practicality. So I went for Kenpo, but I still was super interested in weapons, but there wasn't a lot of that being taught at my school. And I wanted, like, because you're learning Kenpo and it's so practical and so real life, that's, you know, one appeal. But for me, as an actor, a performer, as, you know, raised on these martial arts films, I wanted flash. Like, yeah. I want flash. I want big, expansive performance. I was really, like, I loved looking at Wushu for a while just because of that, like, kind of acrobatic element that was added into it. And that kind of, I love that epic martial arts feel, and when I make movies, I want it to feel epic, and there's a place for practicality, but then there's that place, that's where, like, that's why we're still playing video games. Like, I'm a big gamer too, so I'm like, you know what I mean, we want the we want the sounds, we want the lights, we want, like, you know. So I wanted to have that in my martial arts journey too, but didn't know where to go for that. And I'd also didn't want to take too many eggs out of my Kempo basket. So I decided to just take what I was learning in Kempo, the concepts of motion, some of these universal ideas, and think about them in terms of weapon work and trying to take my Kempo and have it be extended by these different weapons. So staff and sword, the katana, were the main two that I used to kind of explore the universal symbol. Just trying to explore the different pathways and the different maneuvers that are kind of laid out in the universal symbol and what that gives us as Kempoists. And even though it wasn't always so practically done, like the weapon work, you know, there's a lot of spinning, a lot of twirling, a lot of flowers and things, flourishes and things, it still taught me something about movement, like the physical movement in space. So that's where I kind of started to, I always say, like, self-teaching myself, the weapon work. But it did kind of bloom from what I had been learning in Kempo. That's kind of where my early weapon work originated from. And then after a little while, I went to kind of learn the more traditional ideas with those certain weapons, like with the staff or with the katana especially. And I also learned, I started doing like the butterfly knives. Those are my favorite, the balisong, which have a lot of, I guess, like in my mind, Kempo concepts with all the ricocheting and things like that and kind of inertia play, I suppose. So, you know, the nunchucks, like all this stuff, like I look at it and it kind of makes me think deeper about Kempo. And so that's how that kind of blended into my Kempo journey, which I thought was also, once again, very, very beneficial. I started doing this candle. It's like a party trick, I guess. Like for my birthday, I started doing a thing where I'd like put out these candles with different weapons. Every birthday, I'd spend like a dumb amount of hours just trying to like extinguish these candles because I wanted, you know, keep in mind this is the like the epic martial arts thing, right? But I wanted to have, you know, for me, knowing my size, knowing that I'm a petite girl, like, you know, even though I feel like I think I have that weird body thing where I think that I'm taller and bigger than I really am. But then I see myself on video and I'm like, what's that little girl? Whoa. So I knew early on that I needed to be absolutely solid technically in my foundations of Kempo, because I needed to conjure whatever amount of power my body and my weight could. And with that, I also needed to be swift and I needed to be accurate, because I can't just like barrel forward. I'm not like a juggernaut, you know what I mean? I can't just tank it out. That's not how it's going to be for me. And so I knew that accuracy is something that I wanted to put extra attention on from white belt all the way up until where I'm at right now. I was like, I need to go where I want to go. I want to try to always think about the accuracy and my footwork, like my stances. I did not want to cop out on those at all. I mean, though the hands are fun, I did not want to, like, every forward bow, that heel better be glued and to pull it out of the ground. Do you know what I mean?
Gotta have a good foundation, a good base.
Yep, absolutely. So when I started doing this candle trick, what I learned through this kind of, this kind of unique learning experience was my range, having the different range for the different weapons and how to produce power. It gave me a different exploration of power somehow, like how I affect the air around me. Because, you know, it seems simple, but it wasn't. It wasn't simple at all. It actually took some before, and I'm still not, like, I'm not, you're like, if you put a candle in front of me and you're like, hey, extinguish this, it's not like I'm going to do it on the first try. I mean, I just might, but it's not like something where I'm like, you know, try me like at all. But I have a proficiency in it, I guess, for whenever I'll use that. But it gave me an understanding of my range, my power, having accuracy to, like, when I'm trying to strike a specific spot and I'm missing it, so let me adjust. It's like making all of these micro adjustments, just like we do in Kempo, really. You know what I mean? Those tiny little micro adjustments can be the difference between a long fight or a short one. You know what I mean? So,
exactly.
So that's kind of how I guess my journey in terms of my weapon work alongside my Kempo. Oh my goodness, I feel like I've been, I think I covered everything. Overall, like I just really love Kempo. I definitely anticipate going pretty far with this system. I feel like some sort of responsibility to continue it forward and to I just want to be an example and a representative of technical Kempo, where I want to, I think in my world, the best thing that could happen is for the Kempoists coming into the future, the women, growing up and that could get benefit from Kempo. I want to be able to be a representative for them, that, you know, this is a great art for women. It's very practical. It instills so much confidence, or at least it did with me. And if you really pay attention to all of these concepts and really, really kind of like ingrain them in your body, like, I think it's just, it's a thing of beauty. It's a thing of beauty. I guess that's, I think I've mentioned that's kind of my, how I got to where I am today with Kempo and kind of my hopes for it in the future. I just want to keep giving back to it. It's done so much for me in my life. And I want to serve it well, I suppose. So
very, very nice. I'm even more enjoyed. Can't even think of the words at the moment. I'm more inspired by your story and hearing the details of it. I'm like, man, like you're definitely rocking it. I know.
Thank you.
One of the things that stood out to me about your videos when it initially came across them was that I did have that feeling of going on that journey with you. I remember kind of one of the videos, I don't know how long it was you were into being a green belt, but I remember seeing one of the videos and I was like, oh, like she's a green belt now, like awesome. And kind of feel like I was, you know, going on that journey. And then you get your brown and it's like, all right, like I'm following your progress. And
yeah.
And then you have very, very clean technique, very clean style. And it's like, yes, this is the kind of thing that we need to see. I can totally relate to being out there. It's still very scary. A big reason why this show is audio only and not video is because I cannot stand looking at myself on video. I kept saying it keeps coming up as my New Year's resolution that I'm gonna work on putting out more videos. So my other core art is capoeira. And I was gonna, you know, do some capoeira videos, and I'm just I look at my little phone and I look at the tripod and I'm thinking, oh, no, that's not gonna happen. But I'm working my way up to it. But I love your passion for the art. I like that you're not just kind of, you're not doing it for the clicks and mm-hmm. the, and I like that you are, you know, bringing up the Kenpo principles and getting that deeper understanding of the art. And it's not just, mm-hmm. I'm just going to kick and punch and do that. Yeah. That you're trying to apply all of those various principles into the art. So that's a huge for me. You've rung up the ladder of awesomeness in my book. So now I'm even more excited to follow your career and keep on spreading the good word and doing great things. There are so many different things that I would love to get into, and so we'll definitely have to do this again. Let's go ahead and move into our lightning round here, and then we'll close out from there. So, got a few little questions to throw your way. First one being, do you have a favorite technique?
Oh boy, gosh, I've definitely been considering these things coming up with my black belt form. I will say the first one that comes to mind, even though I really love a good chunk of this, I'm going to say unfurling crane. I think I just love the coordination of it. I love that it's, not just a single strike. I love that it's a left, right. Mm-hmm. And the kind of the pathways taken before the kind of like spread at the end. I just think it's a good flow. I love the flow. I love when people ask me about it. I love teaching it. I'm just like, yes, let's unfurl the crane.
All right. But, that's a great one. That's a great one. I like it. I like it. All right. Next one. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
I do like finger set. I'd say form. Goodness. It's a tie up between short three and long four, but at the same time, long four and I are still kind of, we got a thing going on right now. We're getting to know each other a little bit more. But definitely a beautiful form. It's just the most frustrating one. So I don't know, like, a little bit of both of that.
Yeah.
But I think I'd probably then just say short three. Short three is good. I like that it kind of gets more of those circles in there and mm-hmm. those very, it's got a good flow. It's got a nice little snap, but kind of flow to it. Mm-hmm. And it's short. It's nice, short, and sweet. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Well, I guess some Kenpo people are going to love that I'm going to say this, and some are probably going to not like it, but I'm going to say it anyway. So I think you should learn book set. And I think you would do very, very, very well with that form. If you're not familiar with it, a lot of Kenpo schools don't teach it anymore. It is a form that is still taught in the Tracy version of Kenpo. There are ways to get at it, but my understanding is it was a form that was going to be in one of Ed Parker's first books, and there was some sort of falling out between him and the gentleman that created it, and so the form was replaced with a two-man set in the book. Mm. So, but it's really really cool form, or at least it's probably one of my favorite forms. I still do it in the first version of Kenpo that I trained in, so I still do it, but I'll get you the details on it, but I think you would do good with that form, and I think you'd probably like it, so I'm just gonna throw that out.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, next question. Do you have a favorite weapon?
Katana, easily, other than myself, right? That's what every Kenpo is supposed to say.
Oh, yeah, no, great answer. Great answer.
other than myself, because I am the perfect weapon. No, I would say katana, definitely. Definitely, definitely. I think I just, I think the katana, it feels very spiritual to me. And so, as I've kind of said, you know, I think the underbelly of my martial arts journey has been very spiritual. So I would say the katana for sure.
Very nice. Very nice. I like it. Right. And then our last question there, if there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, besides Ed Parker, who would that be?
Oh, goodness. I would say...
And if there's that's fine, too.
I mean, the first one that comes to mind is Michael J. White.
Yes.
Yeah, he's just the first to come to mind. That is such a loaded question. Like, I would love to... I could say Bruce Lee as well, but I'm going to go Michael J. White. That's my answer. Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah. Good thing this is not recorded. That's my man crush. So don't tell anybody. But yeah, for sure. Yeah. Nobody will hear that. So I can say that. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah. I like it. All right. So now is your time for shameless self-promotion. So you can plug anything you want, or if there's anything that we didn't touch on that you want to make sure we get out today. Now is your time to say whatever you'd like. You have the floor, and then we'll close out from there.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm on social media, Corte Danea. I have my Instagram, which is my main platform, TikTok and YouTube. It's mostly a lot of YouTube shorts, a lot of vertical video. I guess I'll wrap out by saying, you know, but my mother always told me, you know, you can really do anything you put your mind to. Just quiet the doubts. Feel the fear and do it anyways, because courage has no definition without fear. So take up courage, keep moving, keep fighting, never stop. You know, the idea is to be unstoppable, always, to have a fervor in your heart and peace in your mind, and strength in your body. Just keep going, keep moving, keep fighting.
I like it. I like it. Very well. Very well said. So yes, once again, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be on with me. And
Thank you.
Overjoyed to hear your story. And like I said, we'll definitely have to do this again and get into the myriad of other things that I wanted to bring up, but I was just so locked into what you had going on that I just said, well, we'll have to save that for another day. But thank you so much. And I can't wait for everyone to hear this and get your story out there and keep inspiring and keep fighting the good fight and keeping Kenpo growing and moving. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.